Coming up on Chasing the Natty, week 4 of the 2024 college fantasy football season is over, and once again, we're here to discuss how to move forward in your leagues. We'll be tackling the disappointing performances we continue to see from high-profile players. We'll talk about some big week 4 performers that you should avoid on the waiver wire, and then we'll get to the part you're all dying to hear. The players you should be adding to your rosters, which could help you massively down the line and hopefully help you win your league. We've got all that and more coming right after this.
Look at Ginty go! Breaks a tackle! He's 10! He's touchdown! Cook's gonna throw the deep ball, and Burton passed the defense! Touchdown, Luther Burton!
Milroe gonna run it again, got a lane! Kicked in the turbo, Milroe! Goodbye! Touchdown, Bama!
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Monday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday and Wednesday morning during the season, 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we're doing here, head on over to campuscanton.com, subscribe there with any of our tiers. We have content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether it's CFF, Devi, C2C, College IDP, College DFS. Really, if you play it, then we've got content, whether that's tools, rankings, pretty much everything you need to succeed. If you want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me in the show on Twitter. I am at @CFF_Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty. If you appreciate the good work that we're doing here, you guys out there can do your part and help us out by making sure, if you're on the YouTube side of things, liking, commenting, and subscribing to the YouTube. And then also, if you're listening to this on the podcast side of things, just make sure you're following the pod and make sure you leave a 5-star review wherever you can. Obviously, the written ones on the podcast are golden. Those help us out a ton. Not only helping us out, but you're also helping the CFF community at large by putting us on the map in so many other different ways. So, with all that being said, appreciate you guys tuning in here. We are through week 4 of the... Here I am already choking up on myself early on in this show. My apologies, everyone there. We are already basically a third of the way through the college fantasy football season already. I don't know about you guys, but like it's been super, super wild. Teams that I have been nailing up until this point just all of a sudden completely flattened out last week, partially because of, you know, bye weeks really starting to take hold, but also at the same time, just like it feels hard this year to really find those truly consistent players week to week. Like obviously you got guys like John Mateer who have been just golden every single week. RJ Harvey, whenever he's playing, right? Amarian Hampton has been solid, except for the one game where he got injured and they took him out early. But even more so, like, again, there's just so many players that it feels like they're great one week and we knew they're going to be great, but then all of a sudden the next week it's complete poo. It's just been kind of hard this year to really, really find, especially wide receivers, man. I don't know about y'all, but like for me, like wide receivers, it feels harder to nail that position down more this year than any other year. Obviously, again, got guys like Nick Nash, right, who's just, oh my God, just the amount of targets that man's gotten over the last couple weeks have been insane. But I don't know, that's just where I'm at with it. Even still, you guys don't want to hear all my rambling about all that kind of stuff. You guys are here to hear the recap of week 4. Obviously, a very, very fun week overall. My dogs were on bye, so I really just got to sit back and enjoy football as God intended. And I had myself a really, really good time. I put a tweet out yesterday that I really don't like. Obviously, I know it's not one person, but like the people who set up the schedule for yesterday or not yesterday for the time you're listening to this, but this past weekend, whoever set up the schedule sucks because man, it was like a snooze fest during the noon window. There just weren't a lot of competitive games. And then all of a sudden 3:30 comes around and I can watch a lot of games at once. I couldn't keep up with every game that I wanted to watch. I had to cut some and obviously I'm speaking from a place of privilege there, being able to have that many games on at once, but regardless, like, the fact is, like, I have a pretty solid attention span. I couldn't keep up with everything going on during that window. And then obviously late night, things kind of calmed down a lot. Really, Oklahoma, Tennessee was the only game that I was like really, really watching in the late night slate. Basically, too many great games in the 3:30 slate, and I'm hoping they get more spread out in the weeks to come, because man, I was sad that I couldn't keep an eye on all of those at once. All that being said, again, you guys know the drill here by this point. We have three segments in this recap and waiver wire show. We'll be discussing our freakout list. You'll be talking about some guys that, you know, haven't performed super well to this point in the season. All four of the guys we're talking about right now were guys that are drafted decently highly in drafts. We got three quarterbacks that we'll be discussing there today, and one running back, a big running back that we'll be discussing there. But as we kind of get into weeks 5, 6, and really onwards, you'll notice the freakout list is going to include some guys that have performed, you know, well early on in the season, but now maybe once they get into conference play, things aren't looking so hot, and we'll get to all of that. After that, we got, of course, my weekly waiver wire traps. Once again, I'll be bringing you guys five different players that performed really, really well this past week that I think you should avoid on the waiver wire. And then, of course, we'll get into the actual waiver wire pickups. But I'm going to go ahead and tell you guys this right now. This is a hard show to put together. Waiver options at wide receiver especially feel very barren this week. You'll notice my tone kind of shift a little bit when talking about some of the waiver options this week, because I'll be real, I'm not as big of a fan with some of the guys that you can pick up this week. I feel bad for the people who are on CFF lists show this week, where they have to pick up guys less than 20% or less than 30%, and, you know, have good matchups this next upcoming week, and also aren't on bye. Like, it, to me, wide receivers is very barren. I know that I actually talked to the duo from List earlier, and they were saying that they actually think running back's pretty barren. I think there's a couple of solid guys at the top that you can go get, but I would also agree that, like, really the only great position, in my opinion, that if you're struggling at quarterback right now, there's actually a lot of good options for you to go and take a look at this week versus running back and wide receiver. The last couple of weeks have been great. Now things have really kind of gotten barren. Maybe things kind of shift back next week, but right now, I feel bad if you're a team struggling with wide receiver or running back, because I don't think there's really a ton of great options out there. And at running back, especially, like, if there are great options, they're like already, you know, 20% owned. Some of the guys we'll talk about here are already 30% owned. We will kind of go above that threshold a little bit today with some of the guys. So there's not even a guarantee that those guys are super available in your league. So that's enough yapping for me. Let's actually get into this. Let's go ahead and move on over to our freakout scale for this week. Once again, quick rundown. Basically a 1 to 10 scale. And 1 is start with confidence. There's no way I would take him out of my lineup. 3, you're looking at monitoring closely. You know, if your team's just loaded, you probably take them out just in case. 5 is looking for a backup plan. The way I interpret that is you are at whatever player we're talking about, you're actively targeting another member of that same position on the waiver wire that week, right? 8 is bench them now. No way you can start them, but probably not cuttable. There's still a path for them to rebound going forward. And then, you know, 10, you're dropping. They're not worth really hanging around with at this point. So let's start here with our number one player on the freakout list this week, which, by the way, once again, shout out to our NIL tier over at campusofcanton.com's Discord. They are always pivotal in helping me pick out which players that the masses want me to talk about when it comes to this segment. So number one requested player by a good margin, Ollie Gordon, running back out of Oklahoma State. If you drafted in your leagues, this man was most likely number one or number two off your board, and there's no other way to really say it. He has not returned that value so far this year. The one time we really saw it was against South Dakota State in week 1, 28 carries, 126 yards, 3 touchdowns, 3 catches, 20 yards. He looked like Ollie Gordon of old. We were ready to rock and roll. And then the last 3 weeks have happened. He has not broken 50 yards rushing in each of the last 3 weeks. He got 17 carries in, or he got 19 touches against Oklahoma State. He got 18 touches versus Tulsa. And this past week, he only got 14 touches versus Utah. And very clearly, something's up here. That sounds so obvious, but like, there's no way, in my opinion, that you are feeling good about what Ollie Gordon has been able to do. He has scored single digits twice in each of the last 2 weeks. And I understand people's vices here. Right? Like, you invested a top two pick overall in this man. You thought he was going to pick up right where he left off last year, and that was just being an absolute monster. He was the RB1 in CFF last year, right? If GNT didn't get hurt, he'd probably be RB2, but regardless, he is not looking good. And it's not just a matter of, you know, lack of volume, right? Yeah, like I obviously said, he got 14 touches this past week against Utah, but I'm not going to hammer that too much on him, given the fact that, again, Utah's a good defense. They were playing from behind. It makes sense why Oklahoma State would go out of their way to pass the ball a little bit more, not hand the ball off to Ollie Gordon. But the weeks prior, to me, are the more concerning ones. Again, 17 carries versus Arkansas, only 2.9 yards per carry. Against Tulsa, 2.4 yards per rush. My personal theory is that Ollie Gordon is hurt, and he is playing hurt. And frankly, I think it would just be better if they rested him moving forward. I think that what maybe Mike Gundy is probably thinking is that if he announces that Ollie Gordon's hurt and he is out, that there's nobody else in that backfield that they really trust like they do with Ollie Gordon. There's nobody in that backfield that really puts the fear in defenses like Ollie Gordon. So they keep putting him out there in order to take some pressure off the passing game, which has looked really, really good. Part of Oklahoma State's success so far is the fact that so many teams are afraid of Ollie Gordon that they stack the box. And Alan Bowman has gone out there with the likes of, you know, Dejon Stribling, Brennan Presley, and Rashad Owens, and they've been carving up defense after defense. Even this past week against Utah, yeah, they end up losing the game, but the entire second half, that passing game was actually working out really, really well for them. So Gundy doesn't want to take Ollie Gordon out. I personally have him at a 6. I think you have to look for a backup running back plan in case things really don't get better here at Oklahoma State for Ollie Gordon. But here's why I'm not freaking out as much as, say, like Chris K. Chris K's got him at an 8. I understand the idea that, you know, bench him now. I am going to be very curious to see what Ollie Gordon looks like after Oklahoma State's bye week in the coming weeks. I think that will tell us a ton about Gordon's success the rest of the way. If he comes out of that bye week and he starts looking like Ollie Gordon of old, it'll 100% have been he was banged up and they were putting him out there when he probably should be resting. But, you know, with a bye week, he will get that week-long rest that he probably needs to in that way. And so I got him at a 6. Nate's got him at a 5. Chris K's got him at an 8. I think you absolutely still got to hold on to him. Again, you invested too much in him, and the path is still there for him to bounce back here. But I think that Gordon, for sure, go ahead and try to target a running back off the waiver wire this week. As I mentioned before, there's not a ton of great options, but I think just having a backup plan in case makes a lot of sense. Next one up here is Jackson Arnold, the quarterback out of Oklahoma. Good Christ. What an embarrassment his performance was against Tennessee this past weekend. I personally have not seen a quarterback completely flub a game like Jackson Arnold did for Oklahoma this past week. And a lot of people are like, oh, you know, Oklahoma's got a bunch of problems. Yeah, their O-line, not great. Jackson Arnold was running for his life quite a bit. Here's the thing, though. Jackson Arnold turned over this ball 3 times in the first half, and all 3 were directly his fault, right? He was completely flustered, which was even weirder because he was playing at home. That should be where he's comfortable. If you can't tell, I'm very disappointed with Arnold. And for the most part, like, his CFF production this year has been good, not great, right? Against Temple, 25 points, he played half the snaps, makes sense, right? You don't expect him to really do a ton there. Against Houston, that was a really, really weird game. Oklahoma's offense, that was pretty much the first That was the first time we really saw that Oklahoma's offense might have some legit struggles against a solid defensive line. They go up against Tulane, 32 points for Arnold in that game. You're feeling a little bit better. And then this past week, literally 0.06 points for Arnold. Given the fact that he threw for 54 yards, negative 21 rushing yards, and he was benched. And true freshman Michael Hawkins comes in for Oklahoma. And quite frankly, as Nate Marquise put it in our chat, just looks like what Oklahoma needs right now, given the fact that their O-line is Swiss cheese. Arnold can run, but Hawkins has, you know, the rushing ability as a full part of his game versus Arnold is more along the lines of he can if he needs to, but it's not his main deal, right? We've seen that a little bit. Again, he had 97 rushing yards versus Tulane, so he can run if he needs to, but this past week just wasn't it, not when he had that many defenders in his face. I've got him at a 9. Kay and Nate are both at 10s. There's no official announcement that Hawkins will be starting for Oklahoma going forward, and that's the only reason why I have him at a 9, versus if Arnold comes back, there's no way I can trust him moving forward with his offense. Things are only going to get harder in the SEC moving forward. Again, Tennessee, don't get me wrong, obviously one of the better defenses in college football right now. Their defensive line is completely legit. But at the same time, right, you get Auburn. You're going to have the likes of Alabama down the road. You're going to have more teams than that. It's not going to get any easier for Arnold. And for me, like, I'm still willing to hold on to him with rosters, especially Dynasty or Keeper Leagues. I'm willing to hold on to him. But I don't know. Again, it's just that performance against Tennessee was literally one of the most disheartening things I've seen in a quarterback in a long time. And so I'm personally just out on Arnold for right now until he proves me otherwise. Next up, quarterback Avery Johnson out of Kansas State. I've got him at an 8 on the freakout scale. Nate Marquise has him at a 7. Chris Kay's got him at a 9. Very, very similar deal to Jackson Arnold in the fact that, you know, this is a staff that pushed out their veteran quarterback, you know, with Oklahoma, obviously Dylan Gabriel got pushed out. With Kansas State here, Will Howard got pushed out, and Avery Johnson comes in. And given what we saw last year, there was a lot of hype, obviously, for Avery Johnson. This is a guy that was being drafted in, you know, round 4 or 5 of leagues because of his rushing upside. And if he just got that Will Howard role that we had last year, things would look really, really solid for him. And it's just not fully been there. And I don't even really blame Johnson that much, although he hasn't really done himself too many favors. This offensive staff, for whatever reason, just isn't drawing up plays to make Johnson successful. And I'm also, you know, I'm going to go ahead and throw up the other, or I'll go ahead and bring up the other quarterback here that I'll be discussing as Kyren Drones, quarterback of Virginia Tech, because these guys are basically in the same pot right now. Both drafted around the same range in drafts right now. A lot of hype for them. Drones specifically had himself a really solid finish to last year that told us that if he just continued what he was doing, he'd easily finish the top 24 quarterback. And both of these guys have just been stuck with offensive staffs whose game plan has just not been to their strengths, right? They're trying to turn him into passing quarterbacks. Johnson didn't even really get a ton of design runs in the game against BYU last night until the second half. And bada bing, wow, shocker. The offense looked a lot better when you actually allowed Avery Johnson to run. And I would say that that would be clear to the offensive staff moving forward. Like, okay, maybe Johnson bounces back from here. But they showed after he ran for 110 yards against Arizona that they still tried to go with him not running against BYU for whatever reason. I don't know what the staff's doing. I don't know what Virginia Tech staff's doing with Drones. He's been a disappointment. He has finished with less than 25 points in 3 out of his 4 matchups so far. He's starting to run a little bit more as things have gotten around here, but he didn't score a touchdown against Rutgers, which, you know, not the easiest defense in the world to get around, but you know, he's got some tough matchups coming up against Miami. He's got Clemson on the schedule coming up. Boston College looks like a pretty solid defensive team right now. I'm not trusting either one of these guys. I'm benching both of them right now. Because as I will point out here, once we get into some of the players that you can pick up out with the waiver wire, there's just so many other guys right now that I think are more consistent for you week to week for CFF. And I would rather trust any of those guys over Drones and Johnson right now. So, for those of you also wondering, Drones is a 9 for Nate and Kay. And then Johnson is a 9 for K, a 7 for Nate. I think I already mentioned Johnson's scores as well. I got him as an 8 for both. Again, in addition to all the numbers that I brought up, both of them just don't look good. Like, if you watch their games, like, the decision-making, it doesn't really speak to a quarterback that's going to turn it around here anytime soon. So, that's our freakout scale for the week. Let's go ahead and move on to some waiver wire traps for this week. As always, we got 5 names up on the board here. Try to get a good mix of quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, people that performed extremely well this past week that you're probably wondering, is this something that we can, you know, go and grab off the waiver wire? And here to tell you, no, absolutely not. So let's get rehydrated there and let's go ahead and move on to our first post week 4 waiver trap of the week, and that is quarterback Evan Simon, quarterback out of Temple. I'll be real, y'all. Most of this comes down to the fact that I do not trust Temple. And I am not a big fan of this offense. Evan Simon, over the past 2 weeks, has shown the lows and the heights of this offense. Against Utah State this past week, 27 passing attempts, 17 completions, 271 yards, 5 touchdowns, and he also got 49 yards and a touchdown on the ground. Again, great performance from Simon this past week against a Utah State defense that is, quite frankly, just absolutely atrocious. And I was kind of hoping that Utah State's defense or offense would take advantage of that a little bit more, but c'est la vie. Here's the deal. Temple's still 94th in offense in the country. Simon doesn't really, again, he does have some dual threat nature, which I think can be utilized, but also, as we saw in the game against Coastal Carolina, can absolutely be neutralized as well. He had 4 rushing yards in that game on 11 attempts. Yeah, he got sacked. He got sacked 2 times for 13 yards, but even still, that leaves him at, what, 2 yards a carry? It's not exactly an explosive runner for the Owls here. So they're 94th in offense. Coastal Carolina was 81st in defense, and that's the game where he finished with less than 16 fantasy points. And like I mentioned, Utah State, they were 120th in defense. Yeah, Simon looked really good against one of the bottom 15 defenses in the country up until this point. You look at Temple's upcoming schedule. They got Army, which is 18th in the country in total defense. UConn's 98th. That's kind of a coin flip as to whether or not Simon could do well in that game. Tulsa, 90th. East Carolina, 83rd. Again, some of these, this schedule sounds like a dream to most teams, right? Again, UConn, 98th. Tulsa, 90th. East Carolina, 83rd in defense. Tulane, 75th. FAU, 89th in defense. UTSA, 110th. North Texas, 115th. That would be a beautiful end-of-year schedule for almost any team, except for teams like Temple that struggled to produce offense in general and have struggled with consistency mightily the last couple of years. I don't trust a Temple quarterback. We'll get to his top wide receiver here a little bit later, but as of now, I'm not trusting Evan Simon moving forward. Running back Daniel Carter out of Pitt is our next guy up here. One of the surprises of the weekend was Desmond Reed, running back out of Pitt, who's had a monster season so far, suddenly out versus Youngstown State. There's been no official reason given. My theory is, again, maybe Reed was banged up. You're facing Youngstown State. You know you're going to slaughter them, which Pitt did, 73-17. And, you know, sit him out. No real reason to rush him back out there. And so for this game, Daniel Carter comes in as the backup running back, and he basically has a Reed-like performance. 109 yards, 2 touchdowns, a catch for 13 yards and a touchdown. That sounds great. Except again, one, Reed should be back any minute now. right? Again, the fact that there was no mention of him sitting out whatsoever tells me that, again, they're sitting him against an FCS opponent, making sure he gets healthy for next week, should be good to go. Also, all those things I said about Carter just now, the 109 yards on the ground, 13 yards through the air, 3 touchdowns, he did that on 8 touches. Once again, you guys know my deal with efficiency on a very low amount of touches. Even if Carter was the main guy moving forward, we can't expect that from him. I think that we'll see a good split moving forward for Pitt if Reed were to some reason be out for any kind of extended period of time. I'm not trusting Daniel Carter. Don't fall for him being super high on waivers right now. Next up, Avery Morrow, the running back out of Colorado State, a veteran of this Rams program this past week. 21 attempts, 156 yards, 2 touchdowns, also getting 2 catches for 20 yards there as well, finishing the day with 30.6 fantasy points. This Colorado State offense is ridiculous to figure out right now. Obviously, them missing Torrey Horton is huge, but there's other problems beyond that. Braden Fowler Nicolosi is somehow way worse than he was last year. He came in and really gave that offense a spark last year. I don't know if losing Dallin Holker was that big of a deal for this offense, but clearly it was. Again, you don't have Holker out there. You don't have Horton out there. None of these other receivers are really stepping up, and so they are having to go to the ground game a little bit more here. The problem is, we seem to have a hot hand situation here with Colorado State, because before this game against UTEP, where Morrow got 21 attempts, he had 3 attempts versus Colorado last week, and then he had 5 attempts versus Northern Colorado the week before. Meanwhile, guys like Justin Marshall have gotten a ton of work in some of those weeks, but then they have weeks where all of a sudden it feels like they're chopped liver. I had Justin Marshall as a waiver wire ad at the beginning of the year because I saw him get 25 carries versus Texas, and I'm like, okay, well, clearly the Rams are going to rely on him moving forward. Nope, he's had single-digit carries since then. It makes no sense. There's no game plan for this Colorado offense right now, and I don't want really any part of it right now. So Avery Morrow, I'm not touching him. Reese Smith, wide receiver out of Liberty, had himself a monster game this past week. 80 yards on 6 catches and 3 touchdowns passed from Caden Salter. For those of you who've been waiting for a decent Caden Salter performance, he finally got one of those this past week. Still not to the ceiling we really want him to be, but, you know, that's a different topic for a different day. Reese Smith, on the other hand, here, again, you're going to look at him, you're going to see, wow, he got 29 fantasy points this past week, 3 touchdowns, 80 yards, 6 catches. That looks pretty good to me, Jared. And again, we know we love those outside wide receivers at Liberty. Yeah, that's great and all, but you don't ignore what he has done before this point. 2 targets versus UTEP. One was for 28 yards, so again, you still got that deep outside shot there. And then 3 targets, 2 catches, and 23 yards versus New Mexico State. And then 3 targets, 0 catches against Campbell. Maybe a performance like the one yesterday against East Carolina really boosts Reese Smith moving forward. Maybe we see a turnaround here for this offense moving forward, but he is not a guy that I am trusting. Let me go ahead and look up something real quick. I just realized I didn't write this down, so let me look up Liberty's receiving room so far this year. Let's see, UCUSA, Liberty, with that 2024, there we go. Yeah, Reese Smith is currently also 3rd in targets on this team. Now, granted, he isn't that far behind the likes of Tyson Mobley. He's got 2 more touchdowns, obviously, than 2 touchdowns. Interesting, because Fantrax says he has 3 touchdowns. Whoop, maybe there's a stat correction coming in there. Regardless, big performance from him this past week, but as I kind of mentioned before, he barely has gotten targeted before this point to the season. And so I am saying hold off until he starts doing this more consistently. Last wide receiver that we will be discussing here is Mr. Kenny Odom, wide receiver out of UTEP. I'm already kind of just squeamish about recommending UTEP players at this point. That does include my boy Javon Jackson. He has really struggled in this transition up to the group of five compared to the likes of, you know, other FCS programs and their offenses translating to the COSA. Scotty Walden's offense really hasn't gotten kicked into high gear just yet. And Odom had himself a really nice day yesterday against Colorado State in a game that they lost, where he scored the only two touchdowns on the day for the Miners, 13 targets, 7 receptions, 128 yards. There are certainly things to like here with Odom, right? He does, on the team, have the highest yards per reception at 20.6. He's obviously getting a lot of high-value targets here. His ADOT is the highest among the team. He's got really solid yards after catch. He's currently leading the team in yards after catch per reception at 12.2, which is really great, obviously. His route yards per route run is the highest on the team at 2.78. There are things to look at here and say, like, okay, maybe he gets more involved as time goes on. But for right now, as of right now, he's third on the team in targets. He is a good ways behind Cam Thomas and Jaden Smith in terms of pass snaps. Trey Goodman, who has less targets than him, has more pass snaps as well. Until things like that start to change, I'm telling you, hold off on Kenny Odom. I could 100% see Odom being a waiver wire ad down the line, but I think that in terms of somebody to grab right now, one, I'm pretty sure they're on bye this week, but also two, I think that this stinks of solid performance, explosive performance here, not something you can rely on week to week moving forward. So those are my waiver wire traps of the week. Again, just recapping: Evan Simon, a quarterback for Temple; Daniel Carter, running back out of Pitt; Avery Morrow, the running back out of Colorado State; Reese Smith, wide receiver out of Liberty; and then Kenny Odom, the wide receiver out of UTEP. All that being said, let's move on to our actual waiver wire ads of the week. We'll start with quarterbacks. As I mentioned before, quarterbacks, if you are struggling at quarterback, you're feeling good this week for waiver wire ads. There are quite a few guys here that I would feel extremely comfortable adding onto my rosters if I am looking for that additional help at the position. Once we get into running backs and wide receivers, you'll see my tone shift quite a bit there. So we'll start with our first guy here after I get myself a sip of water. And let's get moving on through here. So first guy up here is Mr. Blake Horvath, quarterback out of Navy this past week, 9 for 12, 192 yards, 2 touchdowns, 12 rushing attempts for 211 yards and 4 touchdowns, rostered on 7% of rosters. If you guys have followed me for a long time, you know there's one thing I'm really not a fan of doing, and that is recommending triple option pieces. It just, because of the way that the offense runs, it's very rare when you see a guy that you can consistently rely on week to week, because the whole purpose of the offense is that you don't know who's going to get the ball on any given play. And so when we do get guys like this who are being consistent week to week, it is something to note. But again, I still feel hesitant, because a few times I have been bold enough to try to recommend guys, especially in preseason. Looking at you, John Lee Eldridge and Dylan Carson, I have been absolutely burned before. So, like I said, you can imagine that every fiber of my being is telling me not to recommend Blake Horvath, a triple option quarterback, but to ignore what he's done so far would just be CFF malpractice. This guy's a true out of nowhere CFF breakout. He was drafted in 0% of leagues. I don't blame CFF players for avoiding him. Like, Navy's not been an offense that people want to invest in the last couple of years. 2023 is an absolute mess. They had three different quarterbacks getting run at various points, and if you combined all three of those quarterbacks' production into one player, you're still looking at QB 90-ish at best for CFF last year. So there wasn't really any kind of indication of, like, well, if only one guy got all this stuff, then, you know, that'd be a guy that could, you know, finish in the top 20 of CFF. Well, Horvath's here, and he is looking really, really, really solid over the last few weeks. He is showing a nuclear option that I don't think we really even saw coming with the midshipmen this coming year. They completely torched Memphis this past week, 56-44 against Temple. Horvath dropped 112 yards passing and a touchdown through the air. He had 122 yards and three touchdowns on the ground. So a really solid performance there. And I was skeptical because I'm like, okay, yeah, these guys have pretty, blow up weeks sometimes because, because of the triple option, there's a chance for them to hit three touchdowns, which, makes them a semi-fun option in like a best ball format. But consistent week to week is, hard to come by. But then he goes and follows it up with what he did against Memphis this past week, where he, it can only be described as nuclear. He finished the day with 192 passing yards, which 192 passing yards is like borderline illegal for a triple option quarterback. And then he got two touchdowns through the air, plus a whopping 211 yards and four touchdowns on the ground. Now, granted, again, you guys know me, there's some high efficiency there that I don't think we can expect every single week. He had six touchdowns in this game. Can't expect that every week, but here's the deal. He's looked really solid as he's gotten into conference play here in the AAC. 8.1 yards per rush against Temple, 17.6 yards per rush against Memphis. Again, I don't expect that every single week, but clearly, I think we'd expect a pretty solid floor from Horvath moving forward. Clearly, he is a guy that they're going to get the ball to around the goal line. Two, normally we don't look at passing options for triple option offenses for good reason, right? The volume's just too low. Again, look at Horvath. He's averaged 10 passes over the last 2 weeks. Here's the thing, though. Heinrich and, or right, oh my God, what is the daggum? What is the daggum dude's name that is? Heidenreich has been a ton of fun for Navy so far. I've seen some people ask if like he's worth picking up. No, never grab yourself a Navy or a triple option receiving option ever. And then Brandon Chapman, the other running back there, both of those guys have been absolute monsters for Horvath to pass to, part of a huge reason why he had such a big day through the passing game. And they seem pretty consistent for him to work with every single week. So that helps him out a ton. And then, like I said, he has shown that he is one of their main options around the goal line. If I go to their rushing production so far, he has seven touchdowns compared to Alex Texas, two so far. And then the rest of the room has four combined. Like, Horvath is clearly the guy that they're going to. Pretty solid dude. In terms of his stature, 6'2", 195, probably could put on a little bit of weight moving forward. But even still, I think that the midshipmen clearly have their guy moving forward. And based on what we've seen so far this year, he grew absolutely wild, harkening back to the days of like Malcolm Perry. Maybe not Malcolm Perry. Malcolm Perry ran for 2,000 yards. I don't think Horvath's even on pace for that. I think he's on pace for like 1,300 yards. Regardless, the schedule for Navy's very manageable over the next 4 weeks. He's got trips to UAB and Air Force, both teams that he, like, Navy should be able to score against. He's got a bye, and then he's got Charlotte after that. I'm still slightly skeptical that Navy can provide a week-to-week, starter in CFF, but if you're looking for a quarterback to really give your team a boost, I think it's hard to ignore one that's currently on pace for 1,300 rushing yards and 20-plus touchdowns on the ground. So Horvath, a very solid option. If you like more traditional quarterbacks, you're going to love this next guy in Alonzo Barnett. The third, shout out to Nate Marquise. He was probably one of the first guys to really point out that if Barnett got the start at James Madison, he is somebody to keep an eye out for. And given what happened this past week, Nate has been fully vindicated on that take. Barnett's currently rostered in 4% of leagues. He went absolutely nuts this past week, 388 yards, five touchdowns. He also had 99 yards and two touchdowns on the ground. Will the real James Madison please stand up? Because that's the one thing that's really kind of holding me back of like declaring that Barnett is like the waiver wire grab of the week. Because, yeah, he had 57 points in this past weekend's game against UNC. Just absolutely monstrous game. The week before against Gardner-Webb, he had a struggle win of 13-6. Like, they couldn't get anything going, which is partially why they caught everybody off guard this past Saturday when they dominated North Carolina. The total for that game, by the way, was set at 48.5. James Madison had that by themselves in the first half. Granted, you know, there's some wacky things that happened in this game. You know, block punt touchdown, pick six, successful onside kick that led to another touchdown. But that shouldn't cover up just how on fire Duke's offense was in this game. This was easily the best that James Madison has looked all year. Like I said, Barnett put on a show, threw the ball 34 times, 388 yards, 5 touchdowns, 99 yards and 2 touchdowns on the ground. I think much of it can be attributed to the Tar Heel defense completely being overwhelmed and flabbergasted. But here's the thing. This is a skill set and usage that makes him a very extremely useful CFF asset moving forward, so long as this offense remains consistent week to week. If you ignore that Gardner-Webb game, which I'm praying to God is an outlier, because seriously, what the hell was that game? I see a quarterback that has rushed for 80-plus yards in each of his 2 starts. We know that head coach Bob Chesney is not afraid to keep running his quarterback. See all of Matthew Slucko last year. There's no reason to believe that this is going to be stopping anytime soon. They got a really nice schedule coming up. They got Ball State, who's been atrocious against the run this year. UL Monroe, they just stink. And then Coastal Carolina on deck. And then that doesn't even touch on the rest of the Sun Belt schedule they have after that. Those all feel like games that Barnett, in my opinion, should be locked into 25-plus fantasy points, which it makes him a great CFF asset here. As I've hinted at, the big hope for this, for James Madison, is hoping that that Gardner-Webb game was simply a fluke and not a sign of offensive inconsistency that's going to drive you absolutely nuts down the road. Regardless of anything else, given the performance we saw from Barnett this past weekend, there's no way he should be staying on waiver wires this week after that. Next up, Tyler Huff, quarterback out of Jacksonville State, rostered on 6% of rosters, had himself a nice game this past week against Southern Miss. 14 completions, 236 yards, and a touchdown through the air. Also ran the ball 11 times for 77 yards and a touchdown. A lot of things checking off here. Dual threat quarterback? Check. Rich Rodriguez? Check. Plays in Conference USA? Check. Sign me the hell up on Tyler Huff. Again, shout out to JD Yonke on this one. This is a guy that I know that he has been interested in for a while. He's really just been interested in this offense in general as a buy low opportunity all offseason, and is clearly paying off here now. 2023 for the Gamecocks is a bit of a mess at quarterback. You had Zion Webb and Logan Smothers kind of constantly trading in and out due to benching, injury, all sorts of things last year. But one thing was made very clear, though. Rich Rodriguez loves himself a dual threat quarterback option in his offense. Last year, Webb and Smothers combined for over 1,000 yards on the ground. Now, Rodriguez seems to have found himself some stability at quarterback in former Presbyterian starter and transfer Tyler Huff. Tyler Huff has been very consistent the last few weeks. He saw 70 plus rushing yards in each of his last 3 matchups. Even better, that consistency has shown well against different opponents of various difficulties, right? Including a very tough on the road game against Louisville, where he was still able to put up over 100 yards rushing and a touchdown in that game. As the Gamecocks start to play against Group of 5 competition here, I really do think Huff is going to have found himself a really nice groove moving forward in both the passing and the rushing game. So again, the first week against Coastal Carolina, you know, threw for 173 yards and a touchdown, 2 interceptions, first start. That's fine. Against Louisville, I'm not going to expect too much out of him there. He threw for 160 yards. Lots of G5 opponents, or G5 quarterbacks throw for less than 200 yards against Power 4 opponents. What is nice for me to see is that he had 300-plus yards against Eastern Michigan and 236-plus yards against Southern Miss this past week. And that wasn't even Huff playing full-time against Southern Miss, and you know, them switching to a run first offense there as soon as that game really got out of hand. Jacksonville State's next 3 opponents are once again a CFF dream. Kennesaw, they got a bye this week, so obviously that sucks. But then Kennesaw State, New Mexico State, teams that are just abysmal right now against G5 competition. MTSU, could be interesting, but we saw already right with Western Kentucky that they're not immune to a shootout, and Tyler Huff in a shootout sounds like an absolute dream there. If that stretch for a consistent dual threat quarterback doesn't excite you as a CFF player, I'm really not sure what else will. I think Huff's a great add off of waiver wires right now for teams struggling at quarterback. He should provide you some consistency moving forward. Next up, Emmett Brown out of San Jose State, rostered in 12% of rosters. A great performance this past week against Wazoo. 54 passing attempts, 375 yards, and 4 touchdowns through the air. Also added a touchdown on the ground. I think it's safe to say that Craig Stutzman being hired as the offensive coordinator for the Spartans has been a very solid success so far for San Jose State. They're currently number 47 offense in the country in total offense per game. They're averaging 406 yards per game here. Running game definitely still needs some work. Good Lord, I have no clue what to do with Floyd Chalk in my leagues right now. I benched him last week, and of course that means he goes off for almost 100 yards and 2 touchdowns. But what hasn't been inconsistent is this passing game. They are currently number 8 in the country in passing offense. They're averaging 330 yards per game, and Emmett Brown is right there at the center of it. He has had 32 plus passing attempts in every single game. He has had 260 plus in every single game, and really the only game that he, you know, wasn't super great in was the Air Force game, and that's fully expected given, you know, Air Force, a triple option team, limits possessions there. If you take that game away, he's had 34 plus pass attempts in each of his games. He's hit 298 plus passing yards in each of those games, 3 plus touchdowns in each of those games. He's not a runner, which definitely caps his upside compared to some of the other guys that we've been talking about here today. But the consistency here is so great, and the schedule is just going to get better. Again, you're going into the Mountain West. His next 3 opponents, he has a bye this week, but then you get Nevada, you get Colorado State, you get Wyoming. If you give Emmett Brown in this offense, you know, 35 plus pass attempts against each of those defenses, and you have Nick Nash there basically carrying the team for you, I'm not going to complain about it one bit whatsoever. I think that Brown is easily one of the more consistent passing quarterbacks moving forward. I love what the Spartans have done so far with this team, and I'm excited to see what they do moving forward. Last quarterback that I want to touch on here is Mr. Marcel Reed, the quarterback out of Texas A&M, rostered on 9% of leagues this past week against Bowling Green. 29 attempts, 173 yards, and 2 touchdowns. He also had 12 rush attempts on the ground for 91 yards. Didn't find the end zone on the ground. Obvious to me, it's a little concerning that, you know, he only got 24 fantasy points against, you know, the likes of Bowling Green at home. That should have been a very, very easy game for Texas A&M. I'm not sure why they struggled there. But even still, what I do see out of Reed is some pretty solid consistency over the last 2 weeks, right? Against Florida, 178 yards, 2 touchdowns, also 83 yards and a touchdown on the ground. Reed really fits Colin Klein's offense very, very well. Much better, in my opinion, than Connor Wiegman. He reminds me a ton of the likes of Will Howard, Adrian Martinez, Skylar Thompson. You know, he's not the best passer in the world, but man, can he run. And Colin Klein is not afraid to put in a ton of designed QB runs into his offensive game plan. The other part about Reed compared to Wiegman, because Wiegman technically can run too. One, very similar to Jackson Arnold and Michael Hawkins. Yeah, Wiegman can run. It's not part of his game. It's not a major part of his game. Reed, absolutely, running is a major part of his game, and Klein is C2 fit in order to make sure that that happens. The other part is Reed's not coming off of injury. There is nothing really, there's no, like, how do I put this? Basically, like, when Wiegman came back with injury, there was, you know, always that dark cloud hanging over his head of, like, oh, could not be very good because of that injury, may never come back from that. Reed doesn't have that risk factor kind of baked in here, right? He's healthy. He's looking solid for A&M so far. I really like the way that A&M's schedule comes off here in the next couple of weeks, right? They got games against Arkansas. That's a manageable game. Missouri, yeah, you know, that's a tough defensive matchup. I'm not gonna lie there. But they do get them at home, so I fully expect A&M to be able to put up some points at home there. They get Mississippi State after that, 109th in the country. LSU, 68th. It's a bit of a rivalry game. I can expect Reed to put up some points there. South Carolina's got the 17th ranked defense right now, but I have a feeling that that's not going to be the case by the time Texas A&M and South Carolina face off. I think South Carolina's definitely benefiting from some cupcake matchups here early on. They also get New Mexico, who's 124th in the country in defense, and then Auburn, 65th. My point going through that schedule is that if Reed continues what he did against Florida and Bowling Green this past week, I think that he'll be solid every single week moving forward. Like I said, love the quarterback options here. The one honorable mention that I'll throw out here is not really a guy I'm telling you go out and get per se, because I don't really trust this offense in general given the O-line they have. But, you know, we talked about Jackson Arnold earlier. If you have Jackson Arnold, I think you have to go and grab Michael Hawkins as just a handcuff right now until they figure out what they're doing moving forward with that offense, right? I still don't trust that Oklahoma, because that O-line is going to be able to produce a ton every single week, but, you know, dual threat quarterback playing a Seth Luttrell's offense, like, I think you have to, at the very least, if you have Arnold on your roster, go and make it a point to grab Michael Hawkins off of the waiver wire. So that's our quarterbacks for the week. I gotta speed things up here. I'm taking way too long on some of these guys. Let's talk some running backs here. As I mentioned before, I'm going to be way less excited about running backs and wide receivers this week. Again, I think the last couple of weeks have provided us a ton of options, and now karma is flipping the other direction in terms of what positions are favored right now. So we'll start with Khalil Mullings, running back out of Michigan here, roster on 24% of rosters. I don't think it should be controversial anymore to say that Donovan Edwards has been a bust for CFF for what feels like the upteenth year in a row. Khalil Mullings, in my opinion, has cleared Edwards in almost every category except for receiving work. And let's be honest, when your two options at quarterback are Davis Warren and Alex Orgie, how much does your receiving work really matter? There's not going to be a ton of passing attempts. Anyway, what does matter is that on a team with no other options than running the ball, Mullings has been an absolute lifeline for the Wolverine season so far. He's currently seeing 8.1 yards per carry so far this year and is a clear better fit to replace the work that Blake Corum did for the Maize and Blue much more than Donovan Edwards has. Again, if you just look at his stat line so far, it's very Corum-esque. So far in this season, Mullings has 429 yards and 4 touchdowns on 53 carries. Ever since the loss against Texas, Mullings has seemed to turn it up to an even higher level. Against both Arkansas State and USC, Mullings has hit 150-plus rushing yards and 2-plus touchdowns in each of those games. He averaged almost 10 yards per carry during that stretch. Obviously, I don't expect him to keep that efficiency throughout the rest of his schedule, but regardless, like I said, he very much feels like the role that, you know, Blake Corman and Haskins got before him. I am a little concerned about Michigan's upcoming schedule, right? It includes Minnesota and Illinois. Those are obviously tough defenses, but those are also going to be ground and pound rock fights, which is where I think the likes of Mullings can be relied upon to a pretty high degree. As I mentioned before, there's not a ton of great running back options on the waiver wire, and obviously with a roster ship like 24%, you're probably not going to find Mullings in a ton of places for, you know, waiver wires, but, you know, you got a potential 1,000-yard back available in almost three-fourths of leagues right now. That's very rare to find a guy like that this late in the season, so I think now is your chance to cash in on Mullings, and let's move forward with him. Next running back here is a guy I'm a little hesitant on. It's Star Thomas, running back out of Duke, rostered on 7% of rosters. Before the season started, I had identified Duke as a potential place where we could find some value at running back, right? But in particular, I had identified, it was me trying to identify some senior running backs on teams who typically ran committees, but you could see a workhorse role for their veteran quarter or their veteran running back as, you know, a thank you from the staff for all their years, right? They know they're not going to the NFL. Maybe they just, you know, go for one last hurrah. Jacquez Moore was one of those guys, and quite frankly, there's no sugarcoating it. He's been horrendous this year. He's only averaging 2.7 yards per carry. He has a long run of 8 yards through three games so far. Again, he's just not an explosive guy at all. His best days seem behind him. You know who hasn't been horrendous? The guy I just mentioned, New Mexico State transfer Star Thomas, very much living up to his name, Star. He has been a key addition to this Blue Devils offense, really allowing the running game to take some pressure off of transfer quarterback Malik Murphy. Things started slow for Thomas. He had 13 carries for 23 yards against Elon in week one. Definitely not what you want to start with there. But he's gone from 13 rush attempts in week one to consistently seeing 17 plus in each of his last three games. He's taken advantage of the soft competition he's seen so far, rushing for 110 plus against UConn and MTSU. That certainly leaves the question of whether or not he can keep that up versus ACC competition moving forward, which we'll definitely get to that here in a second, because his one game against Power 4 competition so far was against Northwestern in week two, where he got 17 carries for 58 yards. The good news is we're going to find out very quickly what kind of value Star Thomas truly holds down the stretch, as his next games are against North Carolina, Georgia Tech, and Florida State. If he performs well and consistent during that stretch, right, especially against North Carolina and Georgia Tech, I think Thomas could be huge down the stretch, especially when his playoff schedule has NC State, Virginia Tech, and Wake Forest, all three defenses that Duke can absolutely take advantage of. I think that Thomas, given the lack of options at running back elsewhere on the waiver wire, I think he's absolutely worth grabbing, stashing for a week, see what he does against North Carolina this week, and let's go from there. Third running back I want to discuss here is Rasul Faison, the running back out of Utah State, rostered on 8% of rosters this past week. This past week, 27 carries, 148 yards, and a touchdown. Obviously, that volume, that production, all great to see. But when we think about Blake Anderson's system for CFF, we never really connected to running backs. Obviously, you know, Anderson's no longer with the Aggies, but very clearly, this staff is trying to keep his system going as best as possible, even if it is more inefficient than it has been in previous years. You know, obviously, the mastermind behind the offense not calling plays anymore. But hopefully, with some stability at quarterback, with Spencer Petras coming back, the Aggies offense will continue to improve as the season goes along. And with the passing game, especially sorting itself out, one thing I would love to see is Rasul Faison really benefit from this offense getting up and going. Faison has been a huge part of keeping them on track the last couple weeks. He stepped up in a big way. Utah State took a huge loss this offseason when their leading returning running back, Davin Booth, entered the transfer portal, now at Mississippi State doing basically nothing. The Aggies were still set at running back for the most part. You had Faison, you had Robert Biggs. Everybody was pretty much expecting them to split the workload between those two while the offense remained centered on the pass. Obviously, as I mentioned before, injury at quarterback has delayed the passing game development, and even more beneficial to Faison, unfortunately, Robert Briggs went down with an injury in week one. Since that time, Faison has been the clear workhorse in the backfield, especially once they got through their matchup against USC there. He's gone from 10.5 carries a game in the first 2 weeks to 23 carries a game in the last two. Faison has put up 115 plus yards in both of his recent competitions. And if he keeps up this performance, I think it's hard to see how he loses this role, even if Briggs return. We also know the staff is not afraid of a workhorse. One only has to go back to 2022 when Calvin Tyler Jr. got himself 253 carries and 122 yards. As with any running backs in this system, I think the main issue for Faison will be touchdown opportunities. We know for a fact that this system loves to feed the quarterbacks with, you know, passing touchdown opportunities. Even Tyler, who, like I said, got, you know, 1,251 scrimmage yards, only finished the season with 8 touchdowns. Faison's so far following a similar pattern with only 1 touchdown on 406 scrimmage yards. Maybe that balances out. Usually I'm a big fan of touchdown regression in cases like that. Problem is, we've seen that pattern before with this offense, and so I'm a little skeptical of Faison's touchdown ability moving forward, but for right now, I think he's a great add off of waiver wires, especially if this passing game continues to be slow to develop. Next up. Running back Fluff Bothwell out of South Alabama roster on 33% of rosters. Again, this is where I'm cheating a little bit this week because I don't think there's really a ton of sub 30% guys. But there's a couple of guys that are just above that that I think are worth mentioning either again or mentioning and saying like they should be clearly above 33%. Bothwell has done really solid the last couple of weeks as a true freshman for South Alabama. This past week, 14 carries, 116 yards, and 2 touchdowns on the ground. Not any receiving work. He had 1 target but didn't pull it in. Yes, this volume is not how I normally like it, right? He's averaging 19.7 touches a game so far. It's increasing a little bit, but obviously, you know, it's still not, you know, that to that 20-plus touches a game. Here's the deal, though. This is the one of the few times that I'm going to rely on talent. To me, it is so abundantly clear that Bothwell, as a true freshman, is the best running back on this team. He currently out-carries Kentrell Bullock, who is the secondary back right now for the Jaguars, 37 to 30 so far. Bothwell is averaging 9.7 yards per carry compared to Bullock's 6.8 yards per carry. We're seeing him get more and more opportunities each week. Again, the past 3 weeks, he's had 70 plus yards. He's had a touchdown in every single game so far. I only think it's a matter of time before Bothwell becomes the featured back for the Jaguars. This past week, he was the first back out there for Appalachian State. He got himself the first couple of drives. He's the only back out there. It wasn't until a little bit later that Bullock came in to spell him. Like I said, I really think it's only a matter of time before Bothwell becomes the main guy. Obviously, don't start him against LSU this upcoming week. I don't think that's going to be good for anybody. But then they go into full Sun Belt there. Arkansas State, Troy, two defenses that I think Bothwell will do absolutely well against. I like the future of Bothwell quite a bit, and I think he's worth picking up in leagues. Last running back I'm going to mention here, not somebody I've mentioned before as an official play, but I'm kind of shocked that he's still only rostered in 38% of leagues, and that's Nate Noel, the running back out of Missouri. I'll call it wrong. I had the wrong running back out of Mizzou ranked too highly. I had Marcus Carroll. I didn't have him super highly ranked. I think I have him somewhere in the 40s or 50s because I knew for a fact that there was a possibility that neither Noel or Carroll become the main guy, or there's a possibility, especially if we got close to the season, that Noel overtakes him. And guess what? That's exactly what has happened here. And Noel is clearly the main back for Missouri. I'm honestly shocked that the heir apparent to Cody Schrader here is sitting on waivers in 62% of leagues. This isn't still week two, y'all. When we are all looking at his production and we saw, you know, 11, 12 carries versus Murray State and Buffalo. Once Missouri started facing real Power Four competition, got into some close games there where they're not blanking their opponent, it's so clear that Noel is, you know, Kirby Moore's RB1 here. He had 22 carries for 121 yards against Boston College. He had 24 carries for 199 yards against Vanderbilt last week. The only issue right now is the fact that Noel has not found the end zone in the last two games. Guess what? That's going to rectify itself when you have a guy getting 22 carries every single game, averaging over 5 yards per carry in each of his last three games. He's going to be fine. He's going to hit some home runs. I'm shocked that he is still available in a ton of leagues. If you are lucky enough for him to still be available in your league, go grab him like right now. All right, let's move on to wide receivers. I only got four of these guys this week because I put out a tweet earlier where, guys, I don't love any of these wide receiver options this week. Personally, I would say if you are in a league where you're looking for wide receivers, right? Go back to last week's episode, go back to last week's article and look at some of those guys and take a look to see if they're still available. Because I try not to list the same guys over and over again, week to week. And so like some of those guys are still pretty available. So I would go double check those guys first, really before any of these guys that I'll be discussing here. So the first wide receiver here I want to discuss is Luke Grimm, wide receiver out of Kansas, rostered in 26% of leagues. Last season, the target split between Kansas's top three receivers was almost dead even between Lawrence Arnold, Quentin Skinner, and Luke Grimm. All three of those guys returned for 2024, so myself and really a lot of people didn't really expect things to be much different. However, through four games so far this season, Grimm seems to be pulling away in targets. He's got 34 so far. You know, you're averaging 8+ every single game, while Arnold and Skinner have kind of fallen behind at 21 and 18 respectively. They are pretty much getting exactly what they got last year, while Grimm is kind of pulling away, and he's actually on pace for close to 100 targets on the year, which is something that I really like to see in wide receivers here. So what's going on? My theory is that Kansas loses Mason Fairchild, who was their leading tight end last year. And to me, that's opened the door for Kansas to be more reliant on Grimm over the middle, as, you know, the likes of Trevor Cardell and Jerry Casey are certainly downgrades compared to what they had in Fairchild. Skinner and Arnold are, you know, getting the same opportunities on the outside. Meanwhile, Grimm is basically absorbing a ton of the opportunities that would have gone to Fairchild last year, and that's letting him kind of push out forward here. So that's, again, that's enough of my theories and everything about why this is happening. What does this mean for Grimm CFF prospects moving forward? I think Grimm, as much as, like, I don't think he is talented enough to really be a guy that I would want to rely on week to week, I think he's somebody that you can look at and say, okay, solid floor here because of the targets every single week, right? The game against UNLV was weird. Again, only 3 catches for 6 yards. Not sure what happened in that game. But otherwise, he's been very consistent for the Jayhawks. 8+ targets in all 4 games. 2 of them, he's hit 100+ yards from scrimmage, and a touchdown in each of those games. This past week was actually interesting because he was getting a lot of carries as well. He had 3 carries for 55 yards and a touchdown. Obviously, one of those was on a trick play that basically they had hours to draw up for that game. I think that if you're in a PPR league, that Grimm is interesting, again, because of that those target numbers. I am worried that Kansas' offense still has a lot to figure out under new offensive coordinator Jeff Grimes, and so I think I'm worried about their offensive stagnation hurting Grimm at times. But considering their upcoming schedules against the likes of TCU, Arizona State, Houston, all of those games provide opportunities for offensive showcases, so I think that'll be a huge opportunity for Grimm to be penciled in for at least a touchdown in each of those games, because clearly Kansas likes making sure that they can find the end zone for Grimm. So, moving on to our next guy here is Dante Wright, wide receiver out of Temple. Yes, everyone, I did label Dante Wright as a waiver wire trap a few weeks ago, and I won't say that I was wrong to be skeptical at the time, but Wright has gone and proven me wrong, and he's showing that he has the scenario where he is the best player on a bad team, and that is his legitimate path to CFF production week in, week out, moving forward. He has hit, after hitting 100 yards only once in all of 2023, which was a major reason why I cited I didn't want to trust him this year, Wright is now on his straight third game of 99+ receiving yards and a touchdown in each of those competitions. 2 out of the last 3 weeks, he has seen 10+ targets. I don't love the fact that he only got 4 targets versus Utah State this past week, but, you know, the game was a blowout. He did what he was supposed to with those limited opportunities, including a 91-yard touchdown. The good news for Temple is that while I still think they're a bad team overall, their upcoming schedule at least allows for some scoring opportunities. Again, their next 3 games are Army, UConn, Tulsa. We went through it. Like, again, I still don't fully trust Temple's offense because, again, they're bad offense in general against, again, bottom 30, bottom 40 in the country here. But Wright has shown that he can make lemonade out of some lemons here, and I think there's no reason why Wright can't have similar performances in those upcoming games compared to what he's done in the last 3. Again, I don't trust Simon, the quarterback, but I think I can trust Wright moving forward. So I'll leave some crow there, and we'll move on. Next guy up here is Isaiah Nayor, wide receiver out of Nebraska, rostered on 27% of rosters. If you can't tell, This is what I'm talking about when I really feel like these options at receiver are drying up quickly here. Typically, I would not be suggesting a receiver that only has 23 targets through four games guy that's averaging less than five targets per game here. But I'm playing the hand I'm dealt with the receivers I could find so far. As Dylan Raiola settles into the starting quarterback job at Nebraska, he's still developing chemistry with his top receiving options, and I think objectively, there's not been a better connection on this team than the one that he has with Nayor. Nayor has been their deep threat option going back to his days at Wyoming. I think now that he's finally healthy again, he's proving to be just that for Raiola. So far in 2024, Nayor has an average depth of target of 16, which is super solid. Easily the highest among the starting receivers from Nebraska. This helps him get an average, excellent average of 17.3 yards per catch. Currently leads the Cornhusker receivers with 277 yards and four touchdowns through four games. Clearly, him and Raiola really have a nice connection on the boundary there. Again, I don't love it with the fact that his target share is not much higher than that of fellow outside wide receiver Jamal Banks. But to me, it's pretty clear to everyone, including Raiola and that Nebraska staff, that this offense gets more out of their opportunities they give to Nayor compared to Banks. So I would expect personally to see Nayor's opportunities per game to rise. Again, like I said, he's averaging about five targets per game right now. I think that he'll improve that as the season goes along. He'll become a potential go-to receiver for one of the best young quarterbacks in the game. I think it also helps in Nebraska's upcoming schedule. It's actually pretty manageable. They got Purdue, they get Rutgers, they get Indiana. I think all of those are games that are pretty manageable for Nayor to perform in going forward. Last wide receiver I will discuss here is Aron Singleton, the wide receiver out of Eastern Michigan, rostered on 2% of leagues so far. There's nothing spectacular about what Singleton's done so far, but it is another one of these cases where, one, don't love a lot of the options this week, and then two, there's a really nice floor here with Singleton. In every game that has not been against Washington, he has been very, very consistent week to week. He had 9 targets, 8 catches, 89 yards versus UMass, 10 targets, 8 catches, 89 yards versus Jacksonville State, and then this past week, 11 targets, 7 catches, 81 yards, and no touchdowns in that game as well. Obviously, I don't love the fact that he only has one touchdown through four games, but I think that, again, this is a potential maximum floor play here, especially in a PPR format. He is has a very, very nice floor here, right? In PPR format, he has gotten himself, let's see, doing the math on the fly here, 22.9 points against UMass. Against Jacksonville State, he got himself a nice, crispy 16.9. And then against St. Francis this past week, got himself a nice, crispy 15.6 fantasy points. Again, obviously, to me, a guy getting that many targets is going to get some more touchdown opportunities. It's not like Eastern Michigan's offense has been bad, right? They scored 28 points versus UMass. They scored 37 versus Jacksonville State. They scored 36 versus St. Francis this past weekend. I have no doubt that they can consistently hit 30 points against Maction play moving forward. I think that Singleton is going to see some positive touchdown regression considering his targets moving forward. And I like him quite a bit moving forward. Again, he's got Kent State this week. I think that's a great matchup by week. And then again, it's Maction pretty much from here on out. So I like Singleton as a buy low opportunity right now. Last player that we're going to discuss here is our one tight end option of the week. Just like last week, y'all, there's not really great options. Once again, Tanner Cozziel is going off every single week for Ball State right now. Ollie Simcrow with Chris Kay and, you know, some other guys that I was kind of skeptical of how well he would do. He's been nothing but a monster since Ball State's gotten started this year, so good on him. My one option is another MAC tight end for this week, and that is Anthony Torres out of Toledo, rostered on 6% of rosters. Like I said, y'all, there's the top tight ends for this year, I think, are pretty set in stone, and they're mostly already rostered for the most part. We actually did a really good job as CFF analysts identifying some of the top guys this year. four tight ends, and really, if you didn't get one of those guys, you're kind of scrounging around for some guys here. Torres is interesting, right? Because if you can't get a guy with heavy, heavy volume, right? I mean, Torres has gotten five targets at max in each of his games so far. And you, if you can't get a guy who is, you know, going to give you production, Torres, looking at here, he hasn't hit 40 yards in a single game, you might as well go for the guy that's going to get touchdowns, right? And we've seen Torres get four touchdowns so far this year. Clearly, he is a red zone threat for this Toledo offense moving forward. I think that, again, if you can't get any of the other guys, you might as well go for a guy that's going to get you a solid 6 points whenever Toledo's down near the red zone, a guy they're clearly targeting. This is about as good as you're going to get on the waiver wire right now. So that's all I got for Anthony Torres. And then last but not least, I'll give you guys some DST streaming options for this week. I will be real, there are not a lot of great options for DST streaming if that is what you're looking for this week. There is really just some bad luck when it comes to some of these matchups, because I at first was looking at, you know, some low rostered solid defenses so far this year, and guess what? They all got matchups against really potent offenses so far. And then I'm like, okay, maybe I'll go look at some of these, like, you know, like FCS or G5 versus Power 4 competition, Power 4 competition matchups. Well, our best shots there are the likes of NC State, who has been horrendous so far, Wake Forest, whose defense has been horrendous so far, Troy versus UL Monroe. Troy's defense hasn't been super solid so far, and then FAU versus Wagner. FAU's defense has been an absolute disaster so far, and so, like, I can't even really take advantage of that. So what I did take advantage of is I went and looked at which offenses have been performing the worst so far this year, and funnily enough, that leads me straight to probably the DST matchup of the week, and that is Air Force versus Wyoming. Both of these teams are bottom 10 in total offense for the year so far. There's no official over-under on this game yet. I have to imagine we're looking at something in the 30s here. I think that this is a game where you can try to take advantage of things a little bit here. Ohio is the other DST, or one of the other DSTs I'm looking at here. Akron's offense is another one that's just been an absolute disaster this year. Ohio's defense has actually been decently solid for a MAC team so far, and so I don't love it, but given my lack of other options, I'll go there. And then Syracuse, their defense hasn't been great at times this year, but they are facing an FCS opponent in Holy Cross. Now, Holy Cross has been pretty solid on offense at the FCS level so far, so I think that Syracuse is definitely the, if all these other waiver wire DSTs are taken from you, you know, at least play the Power 4 versus FCS matchup and then just cross your fingers. Hopefully Syracuse can maybe get a defensive touchdown in there somewhere. So, all right. With all that being said, I appreciate you guys for listening. Sorry, we kind of went through things pretty quickly, but one, I've been working on this all day and I really wanted to kind of get through this, but also two, like I said, there's not really a ton of options outside of the quarterbacks that I really love. And I kind of hope that came through, and I'm really hoping that we can have some better options for you guys going into next week. So with all that being said, we have come to the end of our show. Appreciate all of you guys for listening. If you have not already, quick reminder, leave a like, comment, and subscribe. If you're on the YouTube side of things, if you're on the podcast side of things, make sure you follow the show, leave a 5-star review wherever you can. That helps us out and it helps the CFF community at large whenever you guys do that, because it gets us in front of more eyeballs. Make sure you guys check out the rest of the Campus of Canton Podcast Network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy games. We'll see you guys back here on Wednesday when we take a look at week 5 of the college fantasy season. Already, bye weeks are starting to heat up, and we're going to have to take a look at some guys that are probably going to be some pretty solid starts that'll help you get through those bye weeks. So, until then, really appreciate you guys, and I hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.